Yo, and welcome back to another episode of the Fix Sports Podcast right here on the Freedom Train Network at www.freedomtrainradio.com. I am Joseph Ward. I'm joined by my homie Sam Dixie, Dot Love, and Javar Grant, and we coming straight from the South, going down. Audio Shop Talk right in your ear hole, right here on the Fix Sports Podcast, where we're getting it in. And for the last number of weeks, what we've been doing collectively is determining who is the greatest college football team of the past 40 years. And we're down to our third round, the second part of our third round. And today we're dealing with 2013 Florida State versus 2004 USC, which I think is a great freaking matchup. This is an incredible matchup. I know we're going to have some good back and forth on this, because I know somebody on this panel who got on glasses ain't relenting on something. So there's a 50-50 chance of who I'm talking about. But, you know, before we get into talking about USC versus FSU, we do, of course, you know, have our HBCU Spotlight as well as our weekly rant. So our HBCU Spotlight is, for the first time, NBA TV will be hosting college basketball games. And it just so happened to be HBCU college basketball. So we're going to get into that, find out what's going on in that. Weekly rant, we got two parts of our weekly rant. Days before the Super Bowl, or the day before the Super Bowl, Andy Reid's son, Britt Reid, got into an accident. And turns out he was drunk driving, and the accident left a five-year-old with life-threatening injuries. So we're going to look into that. Also, Herschel Walker keep talking. God damn it. And y'all know I done several rants on Herschel Walker talking that dumb shit. And he's still talking that dumb shit. So we're going to get on Herschel Walker. So better believe that. But before we get into all of that, we got to start this thing off right with that HBCU Spotlight there, shout. So let's get into that. But before we get into it, Doc, man, everything out there with you in Dallas, man.
It's better than it was, bro. It's better.
It's y'all got, like, because I know I've seen pictures everywhere where, like, snow is everywhere. Mm-hmm. So is it like that out there? And that's what really affecting y'all power and stuff?
Yeah, man. It's first 3 days starting from Sunday, it got real bad. I think we got like up to like eight inches or something like that. But the power went out the first day. So
right.
Yeah. I was without power for 30 hours, which is actually good compared to a lot of people. They were going into like three days. I'm even looking into four.
Right.
But yeah, man, it was crazy, bro. It was crazy. Water was off. Pipes burst everywhere. The roads was ridiculous. It was bad, bro. It was bad.
They wasn't expecting nobody to go to work or nothing like that, was
it? No. But I mean, you do have a lot of essential workers who were out in the streets trying to get to work because, you know, a lot of people was out of power. You can't cook without, you know what I'm saying, without your electricity. So
yeah.
It was a rough week, bro. Like, for real, bro.
Glad you made it through, bro.
Appreciate it, bro.
Man, come on back to Florida, dog. stay your ass away. Don't come back.
Right.
So that's what's up, man. We're glad you're good. So let's get into this HBCU Spotlight. And HBCUs were the first to have live college football games broadcast on NFL Network. How many of y'all knew that? Now you know something, right? So, once again, black sports will break the barrier as far as HBCU basketball being the first college basketball to be debuted or viewed or broadcasted on NBA TV. So, probably the Deion Sanders effect, but the Jackson State men and women's basketball contest for Saturday against Grambling has been moved to Monday afternoon at the L.E. Williams Athletic and Assembly Center on the campus of Jackson State. Both teams will be featured as part of a doubleheader broadcast on NBA TV, with the women tipping off at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time and the men following up at 4:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. The Tigers and Lady Tigers will be the first ever college basketball team to have games broadcast on NBA TV's network. In the latest addition to what is set to be a big week in Jackson, It will start on Sunday when Deion Sanders makes his debut as Jackson State head coach. Jackson State will open their season at home against Edward Waters at Mississippi Veterans Memorial Coliseum. The following day, the two basketball teams will take place on the JSU campus. The Jackson State men's basketball program is currently 6-0 in the SWAC, and they defeated Southern to get that 6-0 mark. So, HBCU, man, it's going, and I'm getting, let me go back the date of that. Yeah, so that's this weekend. So all of that's going down this weekend. So like we were saying earlier before the show, yeah, Jackson State's supposed to be playing tomorrow. So, I mean, that's pretty big. I do think, do y'all, all right, well, let me start. Do y'all think this is a part of the Deion Sanders effect of NBA TV saying, man, let me reach out and put these HBCUs on this, on our program to showcase them?
Well, if they're moving the college basketball game from Sunday to Monday, because the football game is on Sunday too, then I definitely think that has something to do with the Deion Sanders effect. Because you're not going to be able to give your energy to a football game and a basketball game in the same day. It's right. Just not going to get the views that you're expecting to get.
Right, right. Deion Sanders effect. But it's a good thing, and I'm not saying that as a negative, because HBCU sports needed a catalyst, and Deion Sanders right now is that catalyst. So I guess the thing is, for us as people or anybody who claims to support HBCU sports in any way, you need to be watching this. So both basketball games, I don't care if you don't like women's basketball or not. You need to be watching it. I don't care if you don't like HBCU basketball. You need to be watching it, because we can't be complaining on one end. Then when we get it, you're like, oh, man, I ain't watching that, y'all. Tune in to the basketball game and the football game. That way we can get more, because ratings matter.
Yeah, just, and even with just the lack of exposure, that's huge, you know what I'm saying? Because you imagine a lot of these athletes, man, even from a recruiting and scouting standpoint, it's just a lack of exposure. So this definitely helps.
Exactly.
Yeah, man, it's an awesome thing, because you hear more about HBCU football, but you don't really hear a lot about basketball and some of the other sports. So anytime those sports, you know, get a national spotlight game like this. You'll see them every now and then. Like, you see games on ESPNU every now and then. But to be on a national stage like this, and then there's no other games going to be going on at that time period, it's a pretty cool thing.
Right, right. So I'm enjoying what's happening with HBCU sports, specifically SWAC sports. And I'm hoping that the MEAC and other conference, the CIAC and CIAA, that they can eventually be raised up to the level of what the SWAC is, because the SWAC right now got the powerhouses outside of, I guess if you want to throw, well, the only other one they missing is North Carolina A&T as far as like real powerhouses that have been consistent over the years. The only one they missing is A&T, but outside of that, they got pretty much got everybody else. So you don't see what they do. That good HBCU spotlight there, chef, down there in the south there, getting down there, do what we do. Man, y'all make sure y'all support HBCU sports. Don't be out here complaining and sitting on your hands. Get into it and help it out. All right. 2013 Florida State versus 2004 USC. This is a great freaking matchup. This is a great matchup, man. I'm interested to see how the commentary go on this, because I know I've been thinking about it from my angle the whole week. So I'm interested to see what y'all talk about. All right. So we've already identified impact players for both teams. So the impact players that we identified for both teams for Florida State, Jameis Winston, LaMarcus Joyner, Timmy Jernigan. For USC, Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, Lindale White. So those are our impact players that we've already identified. So let's start there. Let's start there with impact players. We already know why we chose them as impact players, so we don't have to get into that. Winston, well, let me say it like this. Who thinks Winston, Joyner, and Jernigan is a better trio of impact players than Liner, Bush, and White? Who think that?
It's tough because with USC, you got two Heisman Trophy winners. I mean, you could make the argument about Reggie Bush. Maybe that year should have went to Vince Young. A lot of people feel that way. But at the end of the day, I mean, and then in fact, and then of course, you know, he actually got the trophy taken away. But we saw what he did on the field. They did hand the trophy to him when the votes was counted. So at the end of the day, you do got two Heisman Trophy winners.
He's the 2005 Heisman Trophy winner, no matter what.
So I mean, I can see that. And like I was saying, you know, like I said in one of the previous broadcasts, when you think about that USC team, those are the big names, but they did have a good defense. So it's kind of misleading with those three, as great as they were, being the three that is nobody from defense going up against, you know, two great defensive players, because they had some great defensive players on that 2004 USC team. So it's an interesting, you know, juxtaposition with these two groups.
So which group would you go with, though? If you had to choose a group, which group you going with?
I think I would choose the Florida State group just because it would give you more balance.
I just wanted you to say that.
I would want to have some more balance. Like if someone said, hey, you could pick these three guys to start a team or these three guys to start a team. I want the three guys that's going to, you know, be spread out over the team more. I would take those. I mean, strictly for that reason.
Okay. What about you, Doc?
I'm never turning down two Heismans, bro. You just can't do it. No matter how much I love State, bro, I just can't do it. That's that trio alone. And then, like we said, man, if you don't have Reggie Bush in that backfield, I mean, you arguably talking about Lindell White could win it too. You know what I'm saying? So it's hard to say. I get what you're saying, Sam, for real, 100%. But I can't turn down two Heismans. Like you said, we know everything. We know why we picked everybody here. But just in terms of the context for the question, I'm going the USC trio, bro.
Okay. Grant?
I'm going with Florida State simply for this reason, is that 2005 is actually the year that Reggie Bush won the Heisman. But we're talking about the 2005 was the year that Lindell White led the country in rushing touchdowns. But we're talking about the 2014. So we can't include what they did after that season, because I think a lot of what they did after it was shaping our perception of how dominant this trio was. Even though they were great in 2004, they became legendary in 2005.
Yeah.
And some of that is kind of pulling into our evaluation of the 2014. And because of that, that's why I'm going with the trio with FSU.
That's fair.
But
I'm right with USC. Cause like I said previously, out of all the impact player, the trios that we put together, in my opinion, this is the best. And this trio was able to sustain their greatness for a longer period than I think any other trio, because we're talking about a 2-3 year period with this trio that they were able to do what they did. When USC, well, it was like nobody's beating them. That's why we were so surprised when Texas beat them with Vince Young. We were so surprised, like, wow, that Texas really won this game. But that just that Vince Young effect. But just looking at if we look at this particular year, what they all brought, it was to me, it was a greater impact than Winston, Joyner, and Jernigan put together. Now, when we start to nitpick, I like Leinart, but I'm not taking Leinart over Winston. I'm just being real. If we go player by player, I'm not taking Leinart over Winston. Now, where it gets tricky is trying to compare White and Bush versus Joyner and Jernigan. I don't think you can do the player for player thing like that with these four. It just don't line up. So I just it'll be some subjectivity in it, but it's just looking at all right, these three, what they brought to the table. They won it this particular year, but the year before, we know what they brought this year and the year after. So that's what I'm looking at with that. So I'm not disagreeing. I do feel what you're doing, what you said, Grant. You can't count if we're being technical, you can't count the Heisman in this particular year, but it's still Reggie Bush. So, all right. So that's all right. So we split. Me and Doc on SC, Sam and Grant, y'all on FSU. Why y'all got to be different? Man, why y'all got to be difficult, dog? All right, don't be difficult, dog. All right, so if USC, Florida State met on a neutral field, I'm starting with you, Grant. I'm going to start with you. They met, they played at FAMU Stadium, this new turf that FAMU got. They're going to play at Florida State. That's big. We need the room, right? Florida State, 2013 Florida State played 2004 USC. Neutral field, who would win and why?
It's the same thing that I said with all the other Florida State matchups, is I got to be able to trust Jimbo Fisher in a one-off game. I don't like him in a bowl game. I don't like him first game of the season. He always gives me pause because Florida State always underperforms in those situations. Even if they manage to win the game, they always underperform. And this would be the best team he had played in a situation like that. So that always gives me pause.
Boys.
But this year he wouldn't have Jameis Winston. Jameis F. Winston. So I'm gonna take Florida State in that one-off match against USC.
Okay. And you want to follow it up with some more supporting information as to why you believe that outside of, okay, they got Winston. Because you already said you barely trust Jimbo, but what would make you say, all right, Florida State would take this victory?
Because I think that Jameis would overcome the coaching issues that I have for these type of scenarios.
Okay. What about you, Doc?
I don't know.
This is a good one. This is a good one.
I'm going to be perfectly honest with you.
This is a good one.
This is one of them games, like, it's got to play out. It's as much as you know what my heart is, but I know what that SC team is. I honestly do not know. I cannot tell you one way or the other. Put the game on whatever and just let them play. I don't know. I do not know. I was sitting over here thinking while Grant was talking, like, bro, I have no idea. It's so many factors that go into that game. Like we said, as good as the players are for SC on the offensive side of the ball, their defense is great. They got a great defense. And we look at Florida State. We know how great their defense is. Can they stop the superstars that USC has on offense? Right. Can the Florida State offense score on the USC defense? I don't know. I don't know what that game looks like. It's one of those games you got to play out. I don't know. I don't know. I just don't know. If somebody just said you gotta pick a team to be perfect enough, I just gotta pick a team, I'll probably pick SC. I'll probably pick SC off of the strength of the trio, just like we talked about. I feel like at some point, Reggie Bush gonna open up something. The running game gonna open up something. The defense, Florida State defense is awesome. I don't know. But I don't know, man. I don't know.
All right, Sam.
I was gonna say we'll come back to you. But
don't come back, man.
Nah, man. Hey, I feel you, it's a close matchup. So if you got teams that's really evenly matched, the thing I always look at is I look at the quarterbacks. Which quarterback do I trust if everything else you feel like is almost a wash? Which quarterback do I trust more? I trust Jameis Winston more. A lot of people are going to, you know, they thinking about, you know, the 30-30 Jameis Winston. But if you're thinking about 2013 Jameis Winston,
yeah,
it's nobody I would trust more to go win a game than him. I mean, I can remember when me and Javar was at that game at Clemson, and it would be third and 13, 14, 15, and you knew he was going to convert it every time. It wasn't even like most teams, you get in third and long and you thinking, okay, let's just run a draw and punt it. Not with Jameis Winston. Nope. He could just pick it up. It's like it was 33 for them. Cause he was that good. He was that dude. And I mean, as good as Leinart was, I mean, I don't see him being that type in a tight game like that. And then also you got a kicker that you could make a case for was one of the best kickers ever at the same time. So if it comes down to a close game, going into like maybe overtime, you need a field goal, last second drive, you know Jameis gonna get him in position, and you know Aguayo gonna hit it. I mean, I don't know about USC. I mean, they didn't rely upon the kicker that much, so I don't know about their situation as far as that. So that's why I would go with Florida State.
I'm a rock with SC. I thought about this all week. I'm rocking with SC on this one. One of the first things I think about, like, there's no argument. I agree with you. I trust Jameis more than I trust Leinart. I do. But I trust the rest of SC's offense more than I trust the rest of FSU's offense as well. Even though that, you know, their margin of victory, 39.5, is the highest ever. You can't deny that. But against this particular team with this defense, because we're talking about two great defenses, so I think Jameis was the strength of Florida State's offense, but as a total unit, the defense was more of a strength. I don't trust FSU's wide receivers. Not in this game. Not against this defense. I don't trust Kelvin Benjamin. No, I don't trust you. Rashad Green, trust him way more than I trust Kelvin Benjamin. I don't trust that. And so that gives me worry about FSU's offense, and then throwing in the factor of, okay, Jimbo and his play calling. How much, because the question would be, how much can Jameis overcome? Because we know 2013 Jameis can overcome a lot. But how much would he really be able to overcome with this particular team when I'm thinking about it? And then flip to the reverse. If FSU's offense is struggling, how long could their defense hang on? Because I believe in Florida State's defense. I really do. Now, against this team, though, because you can do so much with Reggie Bush, and you have to, like, when you have Reggie Bush and Lindell White, you can that gives you options. But then you still have two good receivers and a tight end. So I'm I trust FSU's defense more than I trust USC's defense. I trust SC's offense more than I trust FSU's offense. But as a whole team, I think I trust SC more. So that's why I will go with SC on this for me.
When I go back and look at both of these teams, they both had an axe to grind. For USC, they didn't get credit for their AP National Championship in 2003. And so they wanted to go out and prove the world that they were deserving of that national championship. And so they went wire to wire number one. FSU, they believed that they were a quarterback away from playing Notre Dame in that national championship game, where everyone knew any of the other top five teams in the country would have beaten Notre Dame that day. But when Florida State went out there, they overwhelmed everybody on their schedule. They did not play down to their competition.
Right.
The worst game of the season they played before the national championship game was against Boston College, and they scored 48 points.
I would say they still won by
what? The worst game they played during the regular season, they scored 48 points. USC, they knew they were better than their opponent, but they did play down to their competition a lot during that season.
And yeah, so, that Virginia Tech game, that Stanford game, the Cal game, the Oregon State game, and the UCLA game. Yeah, that's great.
They were just rolling the ball out there because they just knew that they were better than their opponents. But Florida State wanted to make you not want to play football again.
Yeah.
That was the attitude and the hunger that that team had. And I just don't think that they were going to stop just because they had the big, bad bully USC in front of them. And I think they would find a way to overcome them.
Well, and not to cut you off, son, just real quick. When you got somebody like a Jalen Ramsey, and that's where the cockiness of certain players come in. When you got somebody like a Jalen Ramsey on your team who, like, I don't give a damn who on your squad, I'm shutting them down. That gives the other players confidence as well. So, great point. Go ahead, Sam.
I was just speaking about backing off what Jafar said. I mean, you knew they was out to annihilate people. Like, I think about that NC State game and what it was 35-0 in the first quarter. Like, and I remember one particular play in that first quarter where it was like a little short pass to Nick O'Leary, and USC players, the NC State players, they was just done already. Like, he walked into the end zone, like, it was guys in front of him, but they was like, man, I don't even feel like doing this no more. Like, they just quit. They had enough. And, like, it seemed like they did that to a lot of teams. It would be a moment early in the game where Jameis Winston figured out what you was doing, the defense figured out what you was doing, and it was over.
Yeah, I remember one game that year, I think it was against Syracuse, and the coach was like, a lot of y'all guys are not going to go on to play in the NFL, but if you want to know what it's like, you're going to find out today when you play for the
state. Right.
I think the final score was like 59-7 or 59-3 or something like that. And they just destroyed those guys.
Hey. All right. Pushback. Florida State gave up 6 points to Bethune-Cookman.
BCC came to play that day. I think they was still BCC back then, right?
Yeah, back then. Yeah. But, no, I mean, we've all said it. I was excited for this matchup. This is one of the best matchups we're going to see. Like, this whole Final Four has been awesome to me because, yes, we have our opinions, but we can still be wrong. And because the margin between the Final Four teams is not that great. It's not huge margins between each team. I know, and the great thing, this comes down to nitpicking. It really does. It really comes down to nitpicking because each one of these teams, roll them out, bam, they can run over teams from wherever, like, because that's just how great these teams are. I love this 2013 Florida State team. I really do. And honestly, in my mind, I was thinking that the only other team that I would probably pick to beat this team would be 0-1 Miami. Until we got to this point in this week, and I was just like, damn, I think I like SC better. And like I said, I think the thing that really has me picking SC is I just don't trust the rest of FSU's offense, the skill players outside of Jameis, the way I would trust USC. Because it's like Matt Leiner was as great as he was a piece in that. Because those boys would be ballers with or without him. FSU, I feel like it was a bit different. Like, Jameis made them better. So that's what I'm thinking about.
I was gonna say just to push back on that a little bit. I mean, I feel what you're saying, but you could make. I mean, like what Javar was talking about. If you look at the year before, I mean, you could make the argument the roster was just as good at that point. The only thing that was different was the quarterback. So I mean, it's not like Jameis is the tip of the spear. But it's not like those other guys was slobs that he was carrying them. He just made it that much better. Because I mean,
yeah, that 2012 team, FSU defense was a number two defense in the country behind Alabama, I believe. And their only losses was a 1-point loss on the road to NC State that got annihilated in 2013. And then they lost at home to Florida that got annihilated in 2013 by Florida State. And the difference in the game, if you watch those two games in 2012, the difference in the game was absolutely the quarterback play and the lack of trust that Jimbo Fisher had in E.J. Manuel. Because the last play of the game, or the last offensive play that Florida State had against NC State was like a 3rd and 9, I believe.
Yeah.
You got the ball in your hands. All you need is a first down, you win the game. All you need is a first down, you win the game. It's 3rd down and 9, and you call a sprint right with your quarterback. That's why you lost the game. Because you thought he was going to throw an interception if you put the ball in his hands. So NC State went down the field and scored and beat him.
So let me ask, just want to ask this, just for the sake of argument. If, let me go back to the roster. So let's say Winston goes down and Coker, let's say Winston go down like 4th game of the season and Coker has to be the quarterback for the rest of the season. Does Florida State still become national champions?
No. Because, I mean, Coker, and that was the thing, I mean, like, If you was here for the media, like Jimbo tried to sell people that, oh, it's close. Everybody knew from the moment the spring game was over that Jameis Winston was gonna be the starter.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It was no doubt. So yeah, I mean, like, the team was really good, but Coker. The drop down from Coker, from Winston to Coker, it would be too great to overcome.
Yeah, and one thing you can't undersell is that, man, those guys played with E.J. Manuel, but they played for Jameis Winston. And when you believe in the leader of your team, you're just going to, you know, outperform your abilities on the field when you believe.
Right. Yeah, and to Sam's point, straight up, like, I don't live too, you know where I live. I don't live too far from FSU. And what the media, what ESPN was saying, and what people in Tallahassee surrounding FSU was saying was two totally different stories. Everybody in Tallahassee, anywhere you go around, you go to the Publix, wherever, go to Whataburger, go to McDonald's, you go to Chaco's, anywhere you go. Everybody like Winston. Coker's going to be the backup. But in the media, it's like Winston the Coker. That's what made me want to go to the spring game, because I was like, I'm trying to see who this Winston is, because Sam was going crazy. Like, Winston. I'm like, well, let me go see who this Winston is. Then he made that first pass, that back shoulder to Kevin Benjamin. And I was like, first the throw, but then Benjamin caught that shit. Yes. All right, so let me ask this. On the flip side, if Matt Leinart goes down the fourth game of the season and Matt Castle comes in to be the quarterback for USC, do they win the national championship in 2004?
It depends upon how the rest of the season plays out. Because, like I said, when we went through the schedule, they had like six games where it was within one possession.
It might have been tough for them. Because
they would have had a loss somewhere along the way.
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember, because 04, I don't remember. I remember they played who was they played in the championship game? Was it Oklahoma?
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. I don't think that was a situation where it was. They might have been that both of those teams were undefeated. So if they would have had a loss, they might would have still snuck in to the championship game.
Yeah, but I do get you, because looking at especially this Stanford game or this Virginia Tech game, well, Matt Leinart would have been playing in that game. So after the fourth game, so the next game would be the Cal game, where hell, even with Matt Leinart, it was 23-17 victory. So I get that. I do get that with Matt Castle, if you take Matt Leinart out and you put Matt Castle in. So.
Because you can't understand the fact that Matt Leinart won the Heisman that year.
Right.
So it wasn't just the dynamic duo in the backfield of Lindale White and Reggie Bush. Matt Leinart played very, very well.
Right, right, yes. He was
very integral in what they did. I think in 2005, they decided that they wanted to feature Reggie Bush even more. And just feed him. They could have just let Matt Leinart run the show. And I think they just decided that this guy is really dynamic. We're going to feed him and let him kind of lead this team and take some of the pressure off of Matt Leinart.
So let me ask this, because I just want to just get an idea of different aspects before we get into the numbers. Is it a consensus that everybody – if these two teams play, is it a consensus that you would trust Pete Carroll more than Jimbo Fisher?
Yes.
I knew you was going to say that.
I don't know if it's consensus. I would trust Pete Carroll more than I would Jimbo Fisher.
I don't know. I mean, because, I know we're looking at the 04, but, Pete Carroll made some questionable decisions in that 05 championship game, man, that I thought cost him the game. Like, you think about the main play. Well, I mean, obviously everybody think about the run Vince Young ran it in. But the fourth down, it was fine to go for it, but how do you not have Reggie Bush on the field? He wasn't even on the field. Like, it'd be one thing, okay, he's out there and he doesn't get the ball. But he's not even on the field. That was ridiculous to me.
Yeah.
But for me in that situation, if we had the playoffs back then, USC would have had way more opportunities to get to the playoffs than Jimbo Fisher would in his career, because he just had too many inexcusable losses on his resume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A home loss to Virginia, that road loss to NC State. I mean, the list just goes on and on with that guy. And I wouldn't trust him to get us to the playoffs year or at least have us in contention year in and year out without a savant at quarterback like Jameis Winston. But Pete Carroll was proved that he could do it. You know, they were in one game of being in a national championship many years with many different quarterbacks. I mean, you think about with Carson Palmer, who won the Heisman Trophy. You think about John David Booty. You think about
Sanchez.
Mm-hmm. Those years they didn't play for the national championship, they were 11-1.
Mm-hmm.
Jameis saved Jimbo's hide. Like, he was able to hide behind a lot of questionable decisions based off of the fact that Jameis didn't put them in many situations where he had to make tough decisions. And just like Grant was saying, I was like, Pete Carroll, he was able to do that with several different people. So I mean, I'll probably lean more to Pete as well. Yes, I agree with Sam too. Like, there was some questionable calls in that UT game where I feel like he lost that game too. He also, but anyway, I would probably be more inclined to trust Pete Carroll as well.
Yeah,
not in NFL, but
I was gonna say too.
He did throw that pass.
I thought well, it is a bit loaded because where we are now in history and talking about this and taking into account the paths both coaches have taken, what Jimbo is doing in Texas A&M. What Pete Carroll has done in Seattle in the NFL. Yes, he's won a Super Bowl, but then when you talk about plays and stuff, one of the first things people think about is, well, he didn't get a ball to Marshawn Lynch. And no, to be fair, we don't want to factor either one of those for either coach in this because we're trying to think about what they did then. But to be real, it is going to have some kind of impact on how people think about it.
So. And that probably wasn't Pete Carroll's call. The offensive coordinator probably called that play.
But you know,
in that situation, I don't necessarily think that a pass was the worst option, even though you had Marshawn Lynch,
who been running the ball down their throat.
Defense is probably. There's no guarantee that Marshawn Lynch was going to get in. But, you know, if you run the ball, you still got a timeout. But if you're going to pass the ball, probably the better situation would have been some type of run-pass option for Russell Wilson as opposed to putting the ball in a position where it can be picked off.
I don't know nobody else who's making that call.
I think,
not in that situation.
I don't know who's making that call.
I see what Javar is saying. I mean, I would have run the ball, but like to me, between the two things that we're talking about, but those two questions, because the one with against Texas is way more egregious to me, because like he didn't even have a man on the field. Like he could have been like, if you're gonna hand the ball to Lindale, you could at least have Reggie Bush like on the play where he flare out, so like he could draw some attention away from the middle. But like, if you got he not even on the field, you pretty much know what they're gonna do now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not you got the Heisman Trophy winner. You gotta be able to trust him to get you 1 yard. And if you get Reggie Bush the ball in space with the national championship on the line, I got to believe he's gonna be able to find a way to juke somebody.
Get
a yard so they can kneel down and win the game.
Look, it's certain people. Michael Vick, Peter Ward, Reggie Bush, Barry Sanders. It's a small community of people. You give them the ball in that situation because they are literal created players. Mm-hmm. Give them the ball. Now, we're not saying 100% of the time it's going to happen, but we are saying about 90% of the time.
Right,
they're gonna get that because they are created players. But so it's like, not to label on this, but Pete Carroll got a history of doing that. to superstars. Anywho. So let's go to these numbers. All right. So I say USC. You say USC?
USC. I'm going to go USC.
Sam and Grant going FSU. Let's go to the numbers. All right. Margin of victory. Florida State, 39.5. USC, 26.3. Florida State gets denied the margin of victory. Number of All-Americans. Florida State has 3 consensus, 8 total. USC has 4 consensus, 6 total. Florida State gets the nod and number of All-Americans. Total defensive rankings. FSU is first. USC is second. FSU get the nod and total defensive rankings. Number of players drafted. Florida State is 22. USC is 30. So USC get the nod and number of players drafted. Total offensive rankings. Florida State is 6th. USC is 12th. So Florida State gets the nod in total offensive rankings, which gives Florida State the overall victory, taking every category except number of players drafted. How do we feel about that?
I mean, you know how I feel about that 2013 team, man. They got a special place in my heart.
I mean,
I thought going into the week before without looking at the numbers, were that it was either going to be, you know, a one category edge, or we were going to end up in a tie situation. I didn't think it would be, you know, that that.
Florida spread. State whooped their ass in the numbers.
Yeah.
They opened their ass up and shitted on them number wise. Like, and that's, I guess, you know. I still believe SC would win. So I'm not going to be the one who goes rail against the numbers, because we set it up how we set it up. But
hey, but, if Doc can complain about Texas, you can't complain about USC.
You can complain.
No, I'm not going to complain. But what I am saying is, this is more props to Florida State, because. Mm. My criticism of the offense still stands. I've said it over. You all have heard me take this stance for years, how I feel about Kelvin Benjamin and some of the other offensive pieces. But the fact that they were facing this 2014, and when the numbers are stacked against each other, they literally blew these boys out.
And Joe, the thing you got to remember about Florida State's offense in 2013 is, in an era of hurry up, they were going super slow, and they still managed to put that margin of victory on people. Like,
it's not even that, it was the all-time leading scoring team in the history of college football, running the slowest rate in the Power Five conferences.
I know.
They just was ridiculously efficient. I mean, because, like, you know, like I said, in the era of teams running, you know, 100 plays a game, they would run about 60, but still outscoring everybody.
But also, what we're doing also just tells that when we are trying to decide, when we're putting teams against each other, we're putting players against each other, you have to give the full narrative, because there's an eye test. There's always an eye test that you can't deny. But then there are numbers, and you have to factor in the numbers, because these players aren't these numbers. These teams aren't these things. And so the numbers capture what happened, like the capacity of what happened and all those things here. So I ain't mad at it. I am blown away that Florida State blew them boys out, but I ain't mad. I still would pick SC in the head-to-head, but I ain't mad. So,
and that's one of the challenges with college football, because you don't always, or you don't have like a series like in the NBA or the NHL or Major League Baseball to determine a champion. Not the team that plays the best all year long doesn't necessarily win the championship, right, and all of a sudden their season is a failure. I mean, right, that's why we had that 08 Oklahoma team on here, because that was one of the best teams in the history of college football. They just didn't win the national championship.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. One of my favorite teams. So, yeah. All right. So, we got our championship round set. This is a straight up Florida matchup, man. Y'all better a lot of their drop. Hey, man, look. I-95 taking the turnpike. We're going to meet in Orlando, and we're going to play this game. 2001 Miami versus 2013 Florida State. I am ecstatic that this is the match up because it's really going down in the South, literally, with this one.
They're playing at the Citrus Bowl,
though. It's going down, man. So, we're doing this next week. Y'all bring y'all popcorn. I bring y'all opinions, y'all pens, y'all notepads. It's just going down, and we're gonna shake things up and how we determine our champion. We're gonna introduce some new things as well for y'all next week, and we'll tell y'all about that later. But it's going down next week. I can't just off top, just a little preview, just off top. I got Miami. Just let y'all know, I got Miami.
We know you do. You're unbiased because you're a Texas fan.
Hey, that's my score though. But nah, it's gonna be fun. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to that. And I appreciate y'all riding with me on this because this been fun doing these brackets and getting to this and determining who's the greatest college football team. So we're gonna have our determination. And going down in history, and if somebody don't like it, well, hell, they can do their own because we done did it. All right. So we'll get back to that next week. I just want to get y'all excited about next week a little bit. So let's jump into this weekly rant, and then we're going to close this thing on out. So before the Super Bowl started, we heard rumblings and snippets of the stories that Andy Reid's his son, Britt Reid, got into a car accident. Was it the day before or the day of the Super Bowl?
It was the day before.
And it turns out that he was drinking and driving, and the accident led to a 5-year-old child being severely injured. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that really disappoint me now that I know the full story is how it was downplayed. Because of the Super Bowl. Because if you're going to report it. Mm-hmm. Don't report it and try to make it and try to still humanize and not make Britt Reid look like he did something wrong. Britt Reid was drinking and driving. And from my understanding, mothers against drunk driving are on the NFL's ass, Andy Reid and Britt Reid's ass, from my understanding, from what I read. But for those who really don't know the information, let me read to give you a little more. So Chiefs assistant linebackers coach Britt Reid was involved in a multiple vehicle crash that injured two young children less than 2 days before the team was scheduled to depart for the Super Bowl in Tampa. Reid, who is 35, who is Chiefs head coach Andy Reid's son, has worked on the team's coaching staff since his father arrived before the 2013 season. The Chiefs confirmed Friday in a statement to 41 Action News that Reid was involved in the crash Thursday night, which left a 5-year-old in critical condition at an area hospital and injured a 4-year-old child. The organization has been made aware of a multiple vehicle accident involving outside linebackers coach Britt Reid. We are in the process of gathering information and we will have no further comments at this time. Our thoughts and prayers are with anyone involved. The crash happened shortly after 9 p.m. on Thursday on southbound Interstate 435 near Eastwood Traffic Way, which is one exit south of the Chiefs practice facility at the Truman Sports Complex. And Grant used to live in Tampa, so you know about this. According to the Kansas City Chiefs, to the Kansas City, Missouri police, a Chevrolet Impala that had run out of gas was sitting on the entrance ramp of a stadium from Stadium Drive to I-435, so, because this is the crazy thing. The driver had called family for help, which arrived in a Chevrolet Traverse and parked in front of the disabled car. While attempting to get the vehicle running again, a white Dodge Ram sport pickup truck traveling on the entrance ramp, which Britt Reid admitted to police he was driving, according to a search warrant, struck the left front of the stranded Impala. The driver of the stranded vehicle was inside the car at the time and wasn't injured, but the Ram truck continued forward and also struck the right rear of the Traverse. A five-year-old child in the back seat of the Traverse suffered life-threatening injuries, and the four-year-old also in the back seat suffered non-life-threatening injuries, according to KCPD. Both children were transported to a local hospital for treatment. A KCPD spokesperson told 41 Action News late Friday night, the five-year-old remained in critical condition. An adult passenger in the front seat of the Traverse was not injured in the crash. Reed received non-life-threatening injuries, investigators said. This fool hit a parked car on the side of the road. What? Bruh, like, this fool hit a parked car on the side of the road because he was drinking while he was driving, and he couldn't see that it was two cars parked on the side of the road where he needed to get over so he won't hit the cars. So I'm wondering what type of real punishment he's going to get. Because, I mean, that's a fireable offense to me. Like, his ass should be fired. You were drinking and driving and hit a parked car on the side of the road and critically injured some children. Your ass need to be fired. I don't usually call for people's jobs, but his ass, that's a fireable offense because people have been fired for less.
I think the chief's hand's gonna be forced. Like, I mean, they gotta. That's not something you just be like, we let him sit out, or we suspend him with pay, or fine him. This, he got to go. You almost killed somebody, bro. You got to go. You got to go. I don't care.
Get the hell up out of that.
But you got to go.
Yeah, I think like for all organizations that are in the public eye, like sports organizations are, I think a lot of it has to do with what is the results of the transgression that occurs. You know, when you think about what happened with Ray Rice is not in the NFL is because of the results of what happened in that elevator and people seeing, you know, him throw that haymaker. Mm-hmm. And the result, if people see, you know, that the child has, you know, permanent injuries where he's going to be bound to a wheelchair, or if the child actually, it comes out and the child actually doesn't survive, you know, being in critical condition, then that narrative, that imagery is going to force him to be removed from the team. And probably from the league as a coach, like forever.
Because she came out of a coma, I think. If I recall, I think she did.
Yeah,
she
woke up either yesterday or earlier this morning.
Yeah, she did come out.
Yeah, I guess the stain for the NFL is that, you know, they don't do the right thing until they are forced to do the right thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. When they get all the backlash.
I think that's why Mad is kind of has came out the way they did, because, I mean, like I said in the beginning, they made it such a small incident in the beginning when they first reported, because they wanted to make sure the Super Bowl happened. Mm-hmm. So that right there, we've said it before, the NFL's priority ain't with morals or none of that. The NFL priority is remaining the number one sports entertainment agency in the United States, or even the world, but especially the United States. Sports entertainment is the NFL's number one priority, not morality, not keeping women safe, not keeping men safe. It's protecting the shield for whatever that means for them and continuing to play football and not hurting their money.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I wonder if, because I think you mentioned in the article about, you know, the people in Mad who are mad, no pun intended,
right,
about the underreporting. And I just wonder if, because the NFL doesn't have to report on itself. It's, you know, CBS and mm-hmm. all these other media outlets whose job it is to do the reporting on things that happen. And I just wonder if the NFL said that you can't really report on this in any detail or we're not letting you have media credentials in the future. And we want to be able to control the story. I wonder if some of that is what actually occurs, because, you know, NFL is the king of the mountain, and you don't want to not be a part of that if you are a news media outlet. And you kind of just stuck playing the game.
Yeah, it's a sad situation all around. The thing I think about, though, I just wonder how much did they know, though? Because I hear what you guys saying about, you know, not reporting it. Because I'm just thinking about, because I know when I first heard about it, you know, I thought it was just, you know, a crash, like a crash that anybody could have been in.
Me too. That's why I didn't think twice about it when that first
report. Yeah, so, I mean, I felt bad for everybody, but I was like, man, that sucks that happened before the Super Bowl. I didn't know it was, because he had been, you know, because he was drinking. Because that totally changes it. Because, yeah, I mean, anybody can get in a car wreck. Anybody can get in a car accident. You don't have to be drinking for that to happen. But if you were drinking and then you decide to drive, you knowingly putting not just yourself, but, you know, everybody that's out driving in that area, you putting them at risk. So that completely changes it. And I know law enforcement was involved. So, I mean, I just wonder how much did people know about the seriousness of it?
That's a good question.
And everything like that.
That's a good question. That's a good question. I'm inclined to think that they have a lot more resources. So,
true.
Especially not necessarily the NFL at that time, but the NFL do have more resources, but the news outlets, they do have the resources to get more of the information. But that is a good point, because we, even though we know what both of what we're saying are two things that could be true at the same time, that they have all these resources to get this information, but at this time they may or may not have had. Now, what's interesting, though, is Britt Reid has a history of being a fuckboy.
Mm-hmm.
So, 2007, he was arrested for pointing a gun at another driver during a road rage incident. According to Montgomery County, Pennsylvania court records, he was sentenced to 23 months in jail and 5 years of probation on November 1st of 2007 after pleading guilty to charges of carrying an unlicensed firearm, simple assault, possession of a controlled substance, and possession of an instrument of crime in connection with the incident. 7 months after the January 27, 2007 incident, Britt Reid was arrested again and charged with a DUI, controlled substance, possession of a controlled substance, and possession of drug paraphernalia in August 23rd, 2007. Reid, whose initial bail from the road rage incident was revoked after the DUI arrest, pleaded guilty in connection to the second arrest and received a sentence of 1 to 6 months in February 1st, 2008. He was also fined for more than $10,000 for the two incidents in order to complete drug court, which he did in 2012, and he was paroled in 2008. So everybody can change over time, but he has a history of drinking and driving and the history of incidents. But it's hard not for my next thought to be, well, if he was a black coach, would he still have gotten those chances with this record? So
let's think about this, because the Chiefs aren't too far removed from having to make a decision like this.
With Tyreek Hill.
Exactly. That and Kareem Hunt.
Yeah.
Kareem Hunt. And as soon as they got the information, he was gone. Now you add in the dynamic of this being the coach's son. If you keep them around, what does that say about your organization? What does that look like? I don't think that's a good look. That's why I say I think he has to go.
And from
that perspective, you know, has Britt Reid actually coached outside of working for his dad?
Well, they say he was on the chief staff before Reed got there.
Okay.
So, but still working
under your dad. He probably had a job in the NFL because his dad is Andy Reed.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Because my daddy, Wallace Ward, can't get me no NFL job.
He might come. He might have been a coach, but he might be able to get in that
business. Be on the chain game, holding the game, Marcus.
Bad me in there cutting grass, man. Get in security, man.
So, then y'all have a lawn service? Yeah.
Hey, yeah, we did. Hey, we don't want to talk about that. We don't want to talk about
it. Hey, we don't want to talk about it, bro. Don't.
We failed.
but he gotta go, man. I mean, it'd be bad enough if it was just this one incident, but if you talking about a history of making these kind of choices, which I mean, I don't understand in this day and age how people keep continuing to have DUIs. I mean, it's so many ways to avoid it nowadays. Ooh. It don't make sense. Like you can pre-plan an Uber before you even start drinking. That's what's crazy about it. So like you can't even say I was too drunk to call an Uber. You can tell the Uber, you know, you need it beforehand. Mm-hmm. So
Well, the problem with repeat offenders who get DUIs is they most likely have mental health issues. Mm-hmm. That's not something that a bartender can diagnose when they come into the bar.
Right.
And that's just unfortunate. If the individual doesn't decide that they have a problem or they don't decide that they need to seek out help with the addiction that they are, you know, denying that themselves, then we're going to continue to have these incidents, and it's just unfortunate. And what the NFL has the opportunity to do is to bring greater awareness to it. And from their perspective, it sucks that we have to, or people expect us to be the advocate for everything wrong in America all the time because somebody within our organization committed a crime, which is the same crime that somebody commits in almost every organization across the country.
Yeah. But all in all, fire his ass. Because, I mean, look, man, you hit a parked car. So you was faded. You was faded to, because we've all driven long distance on the highway. We drove on this road that he on. We didn't drove on that, and we all know to hit a parked car on the side of the road, you got to be tripping. He was faded, and that's why, you know, like all the factors that we said go into that. So Britt Reed, you tripping. You trip, you need your ass whooped, and you need some rehab.
Yeah. Both of those.
Both of them.
You ain't driving no more.
Nah, bro. Nah. So, second part of this is Herschel Walker, man. We're back on him again. We're back on Herschel Walker again. Because Herschel Walker now, in his attempt to be a better pet for the white people that he want to love him, he's now speaking out against a bill that could potentially open up more doors for reparations for the descendants of slaves in America to happen. Our ancestors, his ancestors. People, before I even read, people like that are funny. I'm not saying that you're right or wrong for being for or against reparations. But I always find it funny that these people can always find a reason that black people shouldn't get reparations in whatever way. but they're always for other people getting reparations in any kind of way. I always find that funny. Like, your own folk, you, you're like, nah, we shouldn't get this because of this. But when it comes to other people, well, they should get that because of, like, bruh. But anywho, it's her. Herschel Walker, right now, Herschel Walker is in the space of one of those athletes who he's making it easy for people to say, shut up and play. Because he ain't smart. So let me read. So College Football Hall of Famer Herschel Walker spoke against a bill that purportedly would pave the way for reparations for descendants of slaves during a February 17th hearing. Walker, a supporter of former President Donald Trump, said during a House Judiciary Committee meeting Wednesday that atonement wouldn't help black people.
This is crazy.
House Democrats have reintroduced a bill that would establish a federal commission tasked with studying the impacts of slavery. The impacts of slavery bring readdress to the economic, education, and health disparities that divide the nation along racial lines. The fact that they got to discuss this shit is another slap in the face. But the government must account for its ongoing role in perpetuating, supporting, upholding white supremacy, said Representative Cori Bush during February 17th hearing on Bill H.R. 40. Walker, one of the several dignitaries. Why is he a fucking dignitary? The bitch just played football. But anyway, Walker, one of the several.
This why, because he say stuff like this.
And football means a whole lot in the state of Georgia.
So it's he spoke at the hearing and said reparations are a moot point in 2021 and that race relations are improving. My religion teaches togetherness. Reparations teaches separation. He said in his testimony, slavery ended over 130 years ago. How can a father ask his son to do prison time for a time he committed? All right, so let me address this.
Take your time, brother.
First of all, my religion teaches togetherness. Your religion also teaches forgiveness. Atoning for your sins. Your religion teach that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say let's not talk about it until people forget about it. Mm-hmm. So it's talk about forgiveness and atonement for the sins, for the bad stuff that has happened. And for America to exist, for the white people that whose ass is here kissing to have these platforms, somebody had to be the free labor class to build all of this.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not act like America got their wealth through equity. That didn't happen. It was through chattel slavery, which made America the economic epicenter of the world. First of all, reparations ain't got nothing to do with your religion. Clearly, you don't really understand your religion. Clearly, you don't really understand your religion, because if you understood your religion, you would be fighting whatever Nat Turner read, you need to read. Because he reading the slave Bible. He definitely reading that slave Bible, man. So y'all got, before we read, y'all got any comments on what this fool has said so far, man?
I'm assuming that he is of the Christian belief.
Of course.
Yep.
I mean, the Bible tells you, you know, all that stuff about, you know, love and forgiveness and charity. It also tells you got to pay your taxes. So it's not this fairy tale. It deals with the actual logistics of how the world works. And like many other people who try to ingrain their religion into church and state matters, they pick out the parts that support their argument and omit the parts that are just makes things convenient to them. And it is one of those cases that we saw play out with his unfortunate quotes.
The thing to me is that he said it, and it just makes it worse but I just I can't stand when people have the argument, oh, it was so long ago. It don't have nothing to do with today. I'm just like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? Just use some common sense. I mean, if you go, like, it's white people that's today that's living in houses, that's running businesses that was started by you ask them, hey, how'd this business come about? My great-great-grandfather started. My great-great-grandfather couldn't start no business. Mm-hmm. And it's not because he couldn't. It's not because he didn't have the ability to. It's because nobody was letting him.
Your great-great-grandfather.
Right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Nobody would let them do it. So, of course, so now, you know, we got to start from now. When they say, oh, it was 130, and then plus, like, that's not even going to, like, this, you talking about slavery, that's not even going to, like, just, like, a few years ago when, we couldn't even go into the same colleges, the same schools. So, bro, it was 130 years ago. It don't matter. Like, it's crazy.
The framing, the conversation, the language that you use is so important, and it can be so detrimental to progress being made, because he basically, when you say stuff like that, you just sweeping slavery under the rug like it wasn't all that bad.
Right.
From his comfortable standpoint. From his comfortable standpoint, because of what the black people whose shoulders we stand on went through, he's able to say that in his comfortable state.
Yeah.
Right.
And when you just look at how whenever the conversation of reparations come up, it is framed in a similar vein that welfare is framed. Is that it's all my tax dollars don't need to be going to people who ain't working, who ain't gonna do nothing anyway. When in actuality,
the
group of people who are on welfare by the numbers and the percentage of the population is not black people,
right?
But the way that it is marketed, the way that it is advertised, the way that it is. The narrative, the way that it's framed, is that it's just a whole bunch of black people who ain't got shit going on, and they just taking all these taxpayer dollars and ain't doing nothing to help out their economic situation. And I think that's the same way that they're framing reparations, is that if we give these tax dollars to all these black Americans, they just gonna piss it away and they ain't
gonna blow it.
But that's not your concern. And I'm tired of that. Even if that happens, that's not your concern. That doesn't diminish the point. Even if that happens, it doesn't diminish the point. What was the overall purpose of slavery in America? It was to dominate the land, free labor. You needed the free labor to develop the land, to build wealth, to have access to the resources. That was the purpose of slavery. America became the economic superpower because of slavery. Free labor, cotton, sugar, all these different things. If that didn't happen, there's no telling what the world would look like. We know America wouldn't be an economic superpower, emphasis on economic superpower. And I was about to say I don't get it. It's stupid people out here. It's just some people are just stupid. But in this case, the Herschel Walker. Herschel, take off the tap dancing shoes and the white gloves. You're not the WB Frog, even though I know you want to be real bad. White people don't like you even more. We've said this before. You are the pet of these people, because they're like, you can't even, your own people can't even trust you. We can't trust you. And the thing is that you are saying what you're saying to try to be in good graces with these people, but in all actuality, the damage you're doing is going to hurt you and your people more, even your own family.
Right.
So, listen. All skin folk ain't kin folk, and we done all heard that before. And it's people like Herschel Walker. People like Herschel Walker are dangerous because he reinforces these negative stereotypes to people who don't care nothing about him.
Right.
Everything he's saying is because he has, like we said, he grew up, he played over at University of Georgia. And you know, those white alums and all those guys, they've been patting him on the back for years. And they don't got the same ideologies that we have, but they've groomed him and they brainwashed him enough to believe, you know what? You ain't black. You Herschel. You Herschel.
You different.
You different. Like OJ said.
Exactly. And Herschel, what he's doing is exactly what they want him to do. You put that one black on the pedestal and let him believe and tell everything he's spewing is exactly what his people is. It's actually kind of funny, bro, because you can sit here and watch and listen to this guy and you can look right in the face and you know everything he's saying. He believed everything he's saying.
That's the crazy part.
It's just like the brown paper bag. You know, when the laws changed and they said we can't hang Negroes no more, so I'm going to separate y'all by skin color and let y'all tear each other down. That's the same thing that Herschel Walker is doing.
He has it mastered. He has it mastered. And it's every time he come out, we just waiting for him to say something stupid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's
ridiculous.
It's like if to help people wrap their mind around it. If you read the book or watch the movie Uncle Tom's Cabin, two central characters, Uncle Tom and Sambo. Now, in the rhetoric that we use, if we're talking about the context of the actual story, we use the word Uncle Tom incorrect.
Incorrectly, right.
Because Uncle Tom was the hero.
Right.
There's Uncle Tom and there's Sambo. Sambo is the sellout. Sambo is the one who's going to go above and beyond to do anything to get white people to like him and to be fair to him so he can have a comfortable place within this bullshit that's going on. That's Herschel Walker. Herschel Walker isn't an Uncle Tom. He's a Sambo because he's the person who's willing to destroy his own thing to be in the good graces of other people. And that's a dangerous Negro. Like you just... Everybody's I'm mad that people didn't know the story already, but Judas and the Black Messiah just came out and more people learned about Fred Hampton's story, even though the internet been around since the early 2000s. Now you have to do a Google it. But anywho, Fred Hampton's story is around. They're learning about the character William O'Neill. I've always had a William O'Neill rule, which you got to be careful about who you're associating yourself, especially if you're a part of trying to uplift black people. You got to be careful who you associate yourself because there's a history of black folk like William O'Neill and Herschel Walker who were either, in a William O'Neill case, infiltrate, mm-hmm. pretending to be a part of what you got to help tear it down, or on the outside, just be, hey, I'm with them. I'm with these white folk. That's me.
And, you know, that just goes back to the framing that I was talking about. You know, when we were growing up and we first heard about the Black Panthers, it was framed as they were like the Black Ku Klux Klan.
Right, right.
Out here trying to kill white people. And that was never what it was about.
Right, right.
So the organization only happened because they wanted to protect their lives.
I mean, that's why I think black people need to really understand, have a better understanding of how propaganda is used, what propaganda is, and how we sometimes negatively use it against ourselves. Because there are certain times to have certain conversations. So certain topics and things we need to talk about, but we don't need to hit record when we talk about it. Because everybody should be privy. But that also goes back to a lack of code of conduct. Because when you don't have a code of conduct and people following a unified code of conduct, you get folk like this that say, hey, well, I don't see any benefit in being united with these people because, hey, these people over here have always given me what I needed. Not understanding, if you couldn't run, jump, or catch, the white folk wouldn't be fucking with you.
Yeah, it's like it made me think about when Lil Wayne was on Undisputed and he said that thing about like, well, you know, I ain't never seen no racism.
Oh, yeah. He lied. Like,
you grew up in New Orleans and you ain't seen racism.
Lil Wayne is on record talking about experiencing racism.
Yeah, but he said that because he felt like that was what white people wanted to hear.
Right.
And that's just like Herschel Walker. I mean, it's different in that he's probably because, like you said, because he was so great at football, he was, you know, for lack of a better term, accepted. Mm-hmm. So to him, it's like I don't know what these black people talking about. White people always treated me great. So yeah, no, white people look great. I don't understand what you guys are talking about. So it's crazy, man.
And Herschel Walker, he's even more fortunate because Georgia ain't really been that good since that was the last time they won the national championship. They had won, you know, 3-4 more national championships. He just be, oh, he's that running back from the 80s that won a championship.
But
he's their last hope of, you know, that ultimate success in college football.
And he's
going to continue to be revered that way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he's more revered in college football than in pro football as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
what's what's even more surprising to me, especially at Herschel's age, it's not like he was that far removed from, like,
you know. That's true, too, man.
For me, I can't wrap my mind around that.
You know, cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, because it was probably 15 years ago that black players didn't even play in the SEC.
That's why it's so weird. It's so weird for me. I'm like, you know, they really have there's a larger sector of players, I would say players that, since we're keeping it related to sports, who do think like that. And shockingly, they're around his age. I've had conversations with people like, huh? Like, what? Where are you coming up with this stuff?
Right.
But they got to do this for the white man. Do this for the white man. The white man ain't going to let me do this. Man, WWWB, man.
Right. What you finna say, Sam?
Yeah, I was gonna say, man, that like Doc, that's a good point, man, because that's surprising. The things he's saying, it sounds like something you would hear from like a 20-year-old. You could even think about, you know, like when you're younger and you hear about the things that older black people would say and you like, you don't get it. But then as you get older, you start to understand. The things he was saying, like I said, it just seems like something you would hear from a 20-year-old that hadn't really, you know, all their lifetime, things, well, okay, it's not perfect. Things have been good. So, it can't be this big a deal. It was so long ago.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that I think this might be Herschel Walker's fourth time in my weekly rant behind this dumb stuff he's been saying, and it's crazy.
Don't even know more time. Don't even know more time.
He like a guest host on your show.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, I can't think of one single player that has been more times than Herschel Walker. But it's crazy. We understand why. It's the need to fit in. It's the illusion of inclusion. That's the need for that, because he has a dependency upon them for his personal survival. Mm-hmm. So, but hey, if that's how Hershel want to get down, that's how he gonna get down. I don't mean we ain't gonna talk about you. So there it is, man. All right, we got another one in the bag, gentlemen. And we got our championship round coming up next week. Really going down in the Sunshine State. 2013 Florida State versus 2001 Miami for our championship game to determine the greatest college football team of the past 40 years. I'm excited about this matchup. I was hoping we get an all Florida matchup for one so I could talk jump to Sam. Because I knew who I was coming in picking. I knew who he was coming in picking. The wild card was Grant and Doc. I kind of think where Grant was going, but Doc, I ain't really sure. So this one's gonna be a good one. Don't say nothing to nobody. Keep your thoughts on how you feel and what you think to yourself. Just know next week is coming back. But we are gonna throw in some new things, some new twists for this to kind of shake it up a bit, make it more interesting and fun. And of course, you know, we'll have our HBCU spotlight in our weekly rant, right? Make sure y'all support us on Patreon at patreon.com/thefix. Check out our website, www.freedomtrainradio.com. Remember, we're available on all podcast platforms. And subscribe to the YouTube channel. Like this video, comment, subscribe, share. Do all those things so we can get better algorithmic thingies going on. So make sure y'all do that for us and support what we got going on. Black Media at your finest right here. So we can't complain about what other people talking about, because hell, we gonna talk about it first. I am Joseph Ward, Sam Dixie, Dot Love, Javard Grant, and we is up out of here.